Tune in to the Paddy Power Cheltenham Preview Night with Ruby Walsh, Tony Mullins, Lydia Hislop and Frank Hickey. Monday the 7th of March at 7:30 live on Paddy Power's Facebook, Twitter and YouTube.
Who's bounding clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Faheen maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Ruby Walsh. Faheen's a champion. Arctic Forest.
It was never in any doubt that it's going to be a magnificent hat-trick in the race for the Willie Mullins train for Vega, and a treble on the day for Ruby. He didn't have to move a muscle.
Hello and a very warm welcome to week 8 of the Cheltenham Countdown as part of the From the Horses Now podcast. And this week we cover three more races at the festival: the Cross Country Chase, the Kim Muir, to give it its full title, the Folk Woolwyn Kim Muir Challenge Cup, and the St. James's Palace Christie's Fox Hunters, which we'll just call the Fox Hunters from now on. Of course, we're not running money back at all races, but first a quick plug. Don't forget, you can get tickets. Check out the show notes. The Cheltenham Bunker, 17th and 18th of March in the Camden in Dublin City. Going to be great fun. Loads of free bets, free points. Well, hopefully anyway, if there aren't, ask producer Mark. But there should be loads of fun. Get your tickets now if you do fancy something fun to do in that bank holiday or bank holidays. And this is perhaps even more important and pertinent. Free tickets. Did I save that, Frank? Did I save that?
Just about.
Okay, thanks. It is both, definitely. Free tickets to Cheltenham. Woohoo! Okay, Tuesday, Cheltenham. We have four pairs of tickets to give to you, our loyal listeners, and it's really easy to get your name into the hat. All you have to do is quote tweet any of the tweets related to this very podcast. And what I mean by that is, instead of retweeting, you actually click on quote tweet and then you say something nice. You say something like, Frank's shirt looks great today. Rory has delved into the handicaps like no one else can, and Ruby Walsh is the brightest, most nice, most wonderful person, or something else, but something nice anyway about the podcast. And we will put you into the hat for tickets on the Tuesday for the Cheltenham Festival. 2 times 4. We have four pairs. Right. Rory De Largy, Frank Hickey, and Ruby Walsh. I'll start with you, Rory. How was your weekend? And I'll do the same questions last week, punting-wise and personally.
Punting-wise, not too bad. Didn't start too well. I've been looking forward to a certain horse in the first race at Kempton, who then failed to complete the course. But I gather that was balked by somebody else. So if I'd known that, I'd have felt slightly better about it. Had a nice winner yesterday with a horse called La Cavsa Nostra for Neil Mulholland, who won a veterans chase at Hereford.
That you're sort of gig, the veterans chases?
I don't mind. It's just a horse I've always liked. He'd been off the course for a couple of years, formerly owned by Robert Whaley Cohen, and he'd won a couple of races over that kind of trip. And he's maybe only had four starts over fences before he went into veterans chases. Didn't have much of a chance in his return to action, got badly hampered early on. And I thought he was a 14-1 shot in the morning, and I thought that was wrong. So just about got the job done. He didn't win very comfortably, but a winner's a winner.
Mm. I'm assuming the horse you mentioned was Dejran de Karjak.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Don't let it say it out loud at the moment.
Well, that was napped up by Matt Chapman, fell at the third, but also tipped by Ruby Walsh. But Ruby, I'll come to you in a second, because Frank Hickey, we gave you the weekend off. How was your weekend?
Very good. I got to get down to Cork for a little bit, see the brother and nieces and a few friends. So it was good, yeah.
And I'll go off topic. Did you see the Cork Hurlers yesterday?
I actually didn't, because I was driving back to Dublin, but my cousin is from Limerick. And yeah, we'd have a bit of banter. Obviously, it's mainly going one way for the last number of years. But he was saying that I had a text from him saying Cork are looking good. But no All-Ireland was ever won in February, PK. Oh. On saying that, I must put in the All-Ireland weekend off on the calendar, just in case. Now, I did get an awful lot of crack out of that when I moved to Paddy Power first. I remember working, I was working for the All-Ireland semi-final, and they were playing Dublin in hurling. Was it 2013 or 14? I remember, I said, I'll wind these lads up now. I said, oh, I said about 20 minutes in, and I said, lads, you better give me that weekend for the All-Ireland off there, because this is over. And I think they just barely scraped home that day, but the lads, like, oh, typical cocky Cork asshole, you know? So I started doing that then all the time. But we haven't had too many weekends off for All-Ireland recently.
No. Well, from one big scalp to another, down to Kildare, Ruby Walsh, how about that against the Dubs? We are going to talk about racing in a second, though, lads, I promise.
20 years in the making, PK. But yeah, look, brilliant as a Kildare man to watch them beating Dublin, even if it only is the league, and even if it is only February. We're not as greedy in Kildare as they might be in Cork. We will take it with both hands. But the management has been a big change in Kildare. Obviously, with Glenn Ryan, Johnny Doyle, Dermot Early, just even the whole line, all the stalwarts of that 96 team are now on the sideline, and they seem to have a lot of lads playing for them. So, wonderful to see Kildare beating Dublin. And then, my nap did win my wings.
Oh, you
mentioned it. The only problem with that was, at the time of recording, it was 16-1. At the time, Ruby thought, looking at it, it was 6-1.
Yeah, it was quick.
Because we were pricing up around lunchtime, man. Well, I was. And Nick was like, oh, shit. Straight down to the shop. As quick as I could. If I'd known Ruby was napping as well, I might have doubled what I had on.
16s was, at the time of recording, on Friday. This is Win My Wings in the Eider Chase at Newcastle on Saturday. Oh, I remember texting the lads in work straight after the recording, and I said, Ruby's after napping up a 16-1 shot, lads. But by the time I'd written it, he was down to, I think, 12s, Frank. So it was clearly, and then he went off 5-6-1, did he?
Well, you know, we have a work sort of Facebooky thing where we, you know, every Friday trying to put up what positions we're taking and horses we fancy. And to be fair, you can go back and look at it, PK, and
I will.
And corroborate what I'm saying. But we did say that we really liked Win My Wings, particularly my manager, Niall O'Reilly, was particularly keen. And I'd say he had a fair bit to do with a lot of the 16 going very quickly.
Right.
And we couldn't get him on the phone there for about an hour. So I'd say he was retail shopping for a bit.
Doing the Christmas shopping a little bit late. Well done, Ruby. Brilliant winning that. A 16-1 time recording. Hopefully loads of listeners got on between 16s and the 11-2, as you said. But also you put up Alan Kerr, who won the Winter Derby at a nice price against the Hot Pot, Lord North. And the other one that you put up was your dad's horse. Now, any second now, Frank might tell me about this. Did he go 6-1? I think he did.
Going back to Alan Kerr, sure, he was always going to beat Lord North, wasn't he?
Why is that?
I mean, the four-year-old versus the seven-year-old, one horse could be improving. Lord North, very hard to see how he was going to be improving with age. Yeah, that was my reason behind putting him
like
up.
Like, if you were dismissing Alan Kerr now, I'd question you as a judge. Like, you
know? Right, okay. So this is all related to Matt Chapman. Just in case anyone is wondering why Frank is sticking the knife in when Matt's not here. But we'll look forward to Friday for sure. That is for sure. Brilliant weekend on the tipping front, Ruby. Well done. I hope that the Pony Hunter trials went as well as your tipping did last weekend. Okay, so let's kick off with the Glenfarclas Chase. And let's kick off. I'll just give you the market. 2-1 favour of Tiger Roll. 5-1 Delta Work from the same stable. JP McManus has got Easy's Land and Prong Guard. 2 ex-French horses. 8-1 Shady Operator. Another one for JP. Brahma Bull is 8-1 for William Mullins. 9-1 Ajas. 10s Midnight Maestro. And Sam Crow, could he go over these obstacles? 10-1 Far Class and 12-1 and Bigger the Rest. Ruby Walsh, Tiger Roll, what a legend of a horse. It could be his last run. And no better place for him to finish. Maybe the Intergrand National actually might be a better place. But anyway, certainly his course form, just unbelievable.
Yeah, look, trying to win at the festival for a sixth time. He's a triumph winner. He won the National Hunt Chase. And of course, he's already won 3 cross-country chases. Look, if you're looking at his form and thinking, is he still the same horse? I think if you read into his form enough, you can see a definite trend with him. This time last year, he ran in the Boyne Hurdle a couple of weeks back, middle of February last year. Beacon Edge beat Fury Road. Durasso was third, but Tiger Roll was last of 6, some 48 lengths behind D. Corey Orlande. And what is relevant to that run is how he showed up in the race. He arrived up on the outside going to the third last, travelling what looked to be quite well, made a slight mistake and just cut out then before he even got to the second last hurdle. And I think if you look at Tiger Roll's last run in a handicap hurdle at Navan, the very man won the race. Tiger Roll makes all his ground out of the back straight, and you're thinking going to the third last hurdle, whoa, Tiger Roll's going to get involved. Lo and behold, he doesn't again. Now, Palace Rock was second in that race. He's since gone and won at Nace yesterday. Humden Swar was fourth. He looked a little unlucky at Ferry House on Saturday. So I would think Tiger Roll's run over hurdles in 2022 isn't that dissimilar to his run over hurdles in February of 2021. And therefore, he went to Cheltenham last year. He beat Easy Land by 18 lengths. I think he's hard horse to oppose myself.
A hard horse to oppose. Interesting. Rory's dog wants to get involved in the conversation as well. So, yeah, I suppose that was going to be your next question, Ruby, is his runs this year. They, on the face of it, look very disappointing. But Gordon Elliott's no mug. He's putting him in these races thinking, look, if we're getting fit, it doesn't really matter if he finishes inside the top three. That Boyne Hurdle win a few years ago was probably a bit freakish, really. You wouldn't expect that.
That's back in 2019 when he won the Boyne Hurdle, I think it was. You know, he's since been to Cheltenham and won two cross-country races. So, like, he's winning the Boyne Hurdle. You said, you're right, it was freakish. But it's back in 2019 before he won his first Grand National, or his second Grand National when he beat Magic of Light. I mean, he was fifth in the Boyne Hurdle behind Cracking Sart in February 2020. He was last in the Boyne Hurdle in 2021, and he's running the Handicap Hurdle in 2022 because the Boyne Hurdle was a week later. That's why he didn't run in the Boyne Hurdle, because it was just too close to the Cheltenham Festival. So there's complete similarities in his preparation, in where he is, and there's definite similarity in his last two runs over hurdles in Navan. So I would put a line completely through the rest of the form on offer. And I would be very much with Tiger Hall. I did watch Prengard running a Nace yesterday. He finished 18th, well, a long way back behind. I think he was 18th or 19th. He only beat one or two behind Palace Rock at Nace. Short coupled horse. Looked like he would definitely improve for the run. But you'd have to think, looking at him, that Cheltenham was coming too soon for him.
Okay, that's interesting, because I was gonna throw this over to Rory for the JP horses. Rory, look, obviously, it's really tricky to try and figure out form lines between Easy's Land and Prengard, who Ruby just mentioned there, because the races they're running in really have very little to do with the cross country, I guess.
No, they're both. When Easy's Land won the cross country, he'd won at the December meeting as well, won a handicap there and landed a bit of a gamble in the process. But he'd won prior to that a listed cross country chase, the biggest cross country chase at Compiègne of the season. And that's the same race that Prengard won this season. Prengard's done it at the same age. They're both five-year-olds at the time. He carried a couple of pounds more, and he's won slightly more easily as well. So you can compare them like that. They're very similar types. Attacking jumpers on a cross-country course. When we saw Easy's Land, the surprising thing about him was we had in our minds the way cross-country races tend to pan out at Cheltenham, where everyone goes fairly sedately through most of the race. And then you get a bit of a shuffling of the pack as they get ready to come back onto the race course. And the race itself begins in earnest then as they hit the race course proper and over the last two stuffed hurdles. Easy's Land showed that there's a different way of doing that. He went hell for leather from the front with Jonathan Plouganou hanging on for dear life at times, really low at his fences, really attacking them. And just getting everything out of the comfort zone. That hadn't really been done in cross-country chases before. And there was a bit of a culture shock there. And he carried that on through the festival. He looked very good. But essentially, he was trained to do something different. Unlike, you know, the traditional, well, we don't really have traditional cross-country horses in Britain. You do in Ireland. They're proper 100 chasers, essentially. It's going back to the origin of steeplechasing, where you're going across country and jumping whatever comes your way. And that's the way Punchestown has been for years. And the Britain have only sort of taken that on recently. The French have a different kind of cross-country racing where they just teach the horses at home to jump poles, jump anything on the ground. And then at the age of four or five, they are ready to jump anything in their path. But they don't do it. They don't do hunting the way that we do. The French haven't really got involved in the cross-country race at Cheltenham for a long time. They've had good cross-country horses at home. It's taken quite a lot of sort of begging them to come over and take part and then get starting up the Crystal Cup and stuff like that there to create a kind of competition through Europe. But when they do fancy taking it on, they look very good. And that's what Easy's Land did a couple of years ago. But his strength really was the fact that he was doing it in a different way. He was young, enthusiastic, a very bold jumper of these cross-country fences as well. And that, I think it took people a little bit of time to react to that and find out, you know, you need to produce a different kind of horse to take him on, or you've got to adapt to different tactics. Whether he's the same force now, I don't know. We haven't seen an awful lot of him really since people talked about him as a Gold Cup winner after he won the cross country. But of course, as I said, it's a very, very different discipline. He ran perfectly well when he was second in it last year, but he's a bit disappointing in the handicap earlier in the season. I don't think he was quite at his very as best behind Tiger Roll last year. And then he's changed stable since. He's left David Cotin, and he's had a couple of runs over hurdles with John Joe. Now, that's a big change of culture. The way he's been, he'll be prepared for races is different. And I've no idea where we stand with him, really. It's a slightly strange move because John Joe doesn't really concentrate on cross-country horses at all. So we're in no man's land. I thought he might have shown a bit more at Ascot last time out on heavy ground because heavy ground seems pretty important to him. I thought he wasn't happy on good ground at Cheltenham in November last season. And I think he's the one who probably wants to have it very deep. So he'll be reliant on the weather in that regard. Although I've looked at the long-term weather forecast this morning again. You'll be delighted to hear. And there's a hell of a lot of rain around.
Oh.
If it's correct. Oh, most of that rain is right at the end. It's from the sort of Thursday before the festival through the middle of the festival. But there are 4 days there when there's the suggestion is it's going to be half an inch of rain on each of those days, not all together. And if that's true, then you're looking at a very soft ground festival. Now, I take that with a pinch of salt because it's coming quite a long way away and weather forecasts tend to be particularly inaccurate at this time of the year. So, but that's interesting, though, that we might just have a lot of rain around close to the festival. And the thing about the cross-country course is it tends to either get deeper than the rest of the track or it tends to be faster because they can't water the cross-country. And it can get very quick if the rest of the track is good. And they would water that towards good to soft. They can't water the cross-country track. And it has been close to firm in the past. I don't think that will happen this year. If it does, it will count against both the French recruits. Although the fact that they're now in different yards, it's a bit of a worry for me. I'd rather, if the French are doing it a different way and it's successful, I'd rather they were coming from their original base. I'd rather David Cotin still had Easy's Land. And I think pretty much the same with Prong Guard. He came from Guillaume McCare and Hector de Lagonest. And again, it's particularly difficult for him because he was ran his best ever race on his last start in November. And he's now had to have a fresh start on the back of that as a 5-year-old. And obviously they've had to let him down and look to build up again. And as Ruby said, the suggestion was he would be very unfit yesterday. And I think it's too much of a rush getting him to Cheltenham. Punchestown looks fine. That looks like a more realistic goal. But there was, the suggestion was if he didn't get a run into him, there's no chance of getting to Cheltenham. He got a run into him, but he clearly needed it very badly. He was beaten a long way. I know it was the wrong trip for him, but you'd like to think at least he would have been going on at the finish where he dropped out quite badly. So it looks like a rush to get him ready. And even if it wasn't, you're just a little bit concerned that he's got a complete change of regime. His new connections really have to get used to him and know how he works. And I think that's very difficult to do for a race like this.
Right. I'll tell you what, lads, we've just had a lesson in French cross-country training as well as Irish Hunter Chases and the rest. Frank Hickey, Chicken Sense, House Stud, they've got obviously Tiger Roll, but Delta Work is a fascinating price at 5-1. We always have these kind of conundrums, these horses who, if they bring their Parkland course form, they'd hack up, but it often doesn't work.
Yeah, like to be honest, I haven't been paying too much attention to the cross country in the last month or two. So I was going through the running order. I was like, he surely won't run. And obviously then you go looking to see what's going on. You see, he was at Cheltenham working with Tiger Roll last week. So he's an intended runner. And look, he's not probably up to grade one chases anymore, but he's still rated, in the high 150s. He's obviously run a cracker in an RSA a couple of years ago. He has the ability. He has seem to be a little bit regressive, but he's only 9. And if he does take to it, he's a big player. My concern would be, Rory will definitely know this, but I'm pretty sure at the festival, at least, no horse making his Banks debut has won at the festival. And I'm not sure has any horse won at Cheltenham at any meeting on their Banks debut. Rory probably knows.
Yeah, there's a very small minority, but there's definitely been a few winners on Banks debut, and I think there might have been one winner. You don't think there's been a single one?
But at the festival, Rory, or the November
at the other meetings, there's definitely been horses who've made their Banks. Because any British winner, essentially, they've usually come in without any Banks experience. It's definitely a disadvantage not to have the experience.
Yeah, because what was the one that was the Kim Bailey horse that was second in National had a crack at it? Wasn't he really well backed and he finished third? What was the horse?
He did.
In the Rooney. Colours. He, that was his first go at it, wasn't it? Oh.
Well, we'll find out. I know. Yeah, I know the one you mean.
We'll find out. It's a fair point that Delta Work would have to win it on his Banks debut. Where are you catching those videos, by the way? Just a shout out to where you're catching those videos with him and Tiger Roll and Sam Crowe as well, working on the cross-country track.
Where did I just put it to Twitter search and see.
Gordon Elliott Racing, actually. Fair play to him. He puts them out and you get to see them. And you're like, Jesus, there's Sam Crowe jumping across country.
Did Sam Crowe go to Cheltenham with them?
He didn't go, but I saw him in the cross-country track in Ireland. I don't know which one it was. Ruby might know whether it was down in, I don't know where, cross-country arena almost it looked like, rather than a track.
You kind of wonder like if it mustn't have gone too well if they didn't take him across to Cheltenham.
Maybe.
To work. Because I thought, like, yeah, if they were intending on running him over it, they would have taken him too. So maybe it didn't work out as well for him. But Delta Work's fascinating. Like 5-1 could look massive.
Yeah.
Obviously. But at the same time, you're taking a little bit on trust. I think I'd probably swerve it for now.
Was that Kim Bailey Horse the Last Samurai, by the way? I just looked it up.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
And by the way, when I say I just looked it up,
the betting that day.
That was Mark Walsh who put it up, but I didn't look it up.
Was it?
Yeah. Thanks, producer Mark. Yeah, so Last Samurai is the one who nearly did it. Look, Delta Work, yeah, he goes into that category if he takes to it, but I've heard that too many times, Frank, myself. What about Shady Operator? I know you like him.
Look, a horse I like a lot. Like, the thing about it is, right, you've got Delta Work, obviously a grade one chaser and his best. Tiger Roll, top class, winning nationals off, you know, marks in the high 150s. And you kind of take the two of them out. The Rory's given the concerns with the two French ones. The rest of them are all like 140-ish types who, you know, nothing outstanding, but they're solid. So, like, if Tiger Roll is anywhere near his best, he's probably difficult to beat. If Delta Work takes to it, he's going to be, you know, difficult to beat. And then the rest are very much kind of together. You know, you can make a case for a load of them. Shady Operator is one I like. He kind of flattered deceive a little bit in his run over fences. You kind of looked at him going, oh, he'll win a big handicap at some stage, but he never really did. But the switch to Ender Boulder seemed to, reinvigorate him. He won in his Banks debut in the PP Hogan Memorial last year. And he went to Killarney then and won the Killarney National off a mark of 129, I think, very easily. And then he went and he beat Midnight Maestro easily enough in the Risk of Thunder last November. So he was 2 out of 2 over the Banks. And recently he was just beaten a neck by Midnight Maestro when trying to follow up in the PP Hogan. I do think stepping up to 3 mile 6 will suit him a lot more than it will suit Midnight Maestro. I think 3 miles is probably, you know, 3 miles, 3 miles 1 is probably the limit of Midnight Maestro's stamina, even allowing for the fact they don't go hard the whole way. I just think the step up and triple suit Shady Operator a bit more. And he's not that older. He could be improving. He'd be one I'd be interested in. But like, if you're talking about anti-post betting, like with Delta Work running and Tiger Roll, do you really think he's going to shorten up between now and then? I don't think so. I think like you'd wait until much closer to the time, and what you'll find is a lot of these ones will probably drift a bit, particularly if the vibes about Delta Work are strong. But he's one I definitely have on my short list to consider, you know, when we get to declaration stage. Midnight Maestro, obviously he was very disappointing at Cheltenham, though, when he had a go here back in, was it the November meeting? December meeting, I think. Maybe it was the trip. He made a mistake and then weakened after that, maybe, you know, 2/3 of the way around. As I said, I just don't think the trip is ideal for him. And he might be one for Punchestown.
Fair enough.
Punchestown Festival. And I think you've got Modus in there as well. He's yet to run over the Banks, so I'd be very surprised if they give him a go first time out. So yeah, like Shady Operator is worth considering. But as I said, I don't think you need to be backing him now. I'd be surprised if you can't get at least this price, maybe 4 places or a bigger price even with extra places coming today.
Ruby, can I ask you about Brahma Bull? Is he a potential runner? Unmute yourself and then we'll get your thoughts. Bet you wish Gillian could press that button.
It will be his first run at the track, PK, but he's a solid enough jumper. Ran well in the Kerry Nationally, ran well in the Ladbrokes Trophy, so yeah, he could run well, but he would need to break that hoodoo of being the first horse to win at the festival that hasn't ran in a cross country race before. And of the horses that are trying that, I would have said Aja, the French horse at David Cotton's, would be more likely to do it, having not run at Cheltenham, than the English or Irish horses, because Autoy is not dissimilar to the cross-country course in Cheltenham. What you jump in the Grand Steep to Paris or in any chase in Autoy, be it Bullfinches, Hedges, there's a bank in the back straight, the big river, big water jump in front of the stands. You know, I think they could. Aja ran in last season's Grand Steve de Paris. Rachel Blackmore actually rode him for David Cotton. He only finished seventh. He doesn't have form over the distance. He was second in Compiègne over 3 miles, but his French form is fairly solid as a chaser, and he could be of interest.
Well, definitely going to check out. That's AJAS, Aja. Good shout there, Ruby. He's currently a 9-1 shot. All right, Ruby, what wins the cross-country? Oh, sorry, Rory, did you want to jump in there?
I was just going to jump in. Rivage d'Or, was he not winning on his cross-country debut?
You've been Googling there for the last time.
He might well be the one, yeah. I think he might have.
I was convinced there was one, and I think... I think he might have, actually. Well, there you go. That makes me feel better.
What's that, Ruby? Puts the whole thing
out the window? Debate out the window.
A Rivage d'Or, yeah, definitely. Again, when we're talking about freaking
But interesting
results.
Also a Jagenstein horse as well. Yes. So, you know, if you want to take the parallels there, you're welcome to them.
Yeah, Delta Work, Jagenstein, very good. Okay. All right, Ruby, give us the winner of the cross country.
I think Tiger Roy will go out in a blaze of glory. I don't think anyone will begrudge him. I don't think anybody will begrudge him that.
Yeah, that would be great. Rory de Largy?
I'll weigh in with Tiger Roll as well. I think there's significant negatives over most of the others. And I hope he wins by 40 lengths, to be honest. And then, you know, the whole debate can start again.
Oh, God. I don't think I could do that again. I don't think you do. And Frank Hickey?
Look, he's the most likely winner. Would I want to back him? He probably could shorten up a bit, actually, if, depending on what happens with Delta Work in the market. And I'd be against Easeland. He's just kind of lost his way a bit. And I'm not sure that Pringard will run. I think he won't run. But from a betting point of view, I probably wouldn't have a bet right now. I think the three that would interest me maybe each way, but maybe a bit close to the time, would be Mortal, Freewheeling Dylan, and Shady Operator would be my three sort of at prices. Mortal caught the eye here at December, traveled really well, was bang there, jumping the last and kind of weakened up the hill a bit. At his peak, he was rated in the low 150s over fences, so he's a bit of class. He lost his way. But Gordon had him, and I thought, like, if you go back to when Tiger Roll had his first start over at the banks of Cheltenham, it was the same race back in 2017. And, you know, he shaped similar, like, not half as well. He kind of traveled well to a point and cut out. But, Morton's one I wouldn't put a line through. And Freewheeling Dylan was still going all right at his first try at those fences at the November meeting. He unseated at the Aintree fence. Still going all right. He obviously won the Irish National last year, so stamina is no issue. He's rated 146. So again, you know, his rating alone would bring him into it. And he seemed to take to it fine, bar that mistake. It was just one where the jockey was hanging on for about 6 or 7 strides after the fence, and eventually gravity took over and he came off. From a betting point of view, unless you want to, you know, steam into something like Tiger Roll or Delta Work, I'd be sitting back maybe and waiting till declarations, getting extra places and, you know, tighter margins and having maybe an each way bet then.
Okay, that's fair enough. We love your honesty. Right, we're going to move on. We have a couple of questions. One from Paul Murphy. This one is a question for all three of you. Paul writes, the quartet of Honeysuckle, Alaho, Shishkin and Facile Vega are all odds on to win at Cheltenham. Can I ask you which is the most solid of the four? And which is the most vulnerable? Rory de Largy, you can go first.
Well, there's an easy way of doing this, and look at the prices they are at the moment. And the one that's the biggest price tends to be the one that's most vulnerable. But I'll throw in Alaho. Not that he's the second shortest next to Honeysuckle, and listen, his chance is blindingly obvious. The only thing I want to say about Alaho is, there seems to be a sort of general acceptance that he's going to go out and do the same thing as he did last year. And the one thing about his performance last year was he didn't win within himself. He pushed himself to the limit almost through the race. You know, that's why it was such a spectacular performance. He took no chances. Everything he did was, you know, if anything had gone wrong, it would have been disaster. You know, so he was very fast and very fluent at his fences, but had he missed one, it could have been difficult. And he went at a really strong gallop. And if he'd gone any stronger or not been able to get a breather at a crucial point at the top of the hill, then he would have struggled to win as well as he did. Now, he's won very easily indeed. But the idea that any horse can go out and perform to the limit of their ability every time they run is false. And I would just throw him in there not because I think he's, not because I want to lay him at a shade of odds on. I've heard some people suggest he might be, you know, more like twos on the day. But I think we're just taking it for granted that he can just flick a switch and do that every time he wants to. And when you're taking, you know, when you're taking no chances at all, and, well, you're not taking no chances, the opposite of that, when you're doing everything at the limit, there's more chance of something going wrong. So that's the only point I'd make.
He's your most vulnerable?
Yes.
Of the quartet.
Just because, right. I mean, in fairness, strictly speaking, Fassad Vega is the most vulnerable because he's not been to Cheltenham before. Mm. The form in the bumper is notional. There could be an absolute superstar hiding in there that we don't know about. Whereas in the Champion Hurdle and in the Ryanair, we know everything we need to know about all the opposition. So yeah. The prices are more reliable. But I just wanted to make that point about Alaho that yeah. no one really seems to have made before.
That's an interesting shout. Frank, most vulnerable and the strongest, which's most solid, which's most vulnerable, that quartet?
I thought Alaho was probably the most solid just because I was struggling to find something that would, you know, really put it up to him, maybe conflate it. St. Cavan was disappointing and a lot of the ones immediately behind him in the market aren't going to run.
Okay.
But I definitely echo what Rory said, that I made the comparison to even Mastermind, that when he was a wide margin winner of the Queen Mother, he came back and won the following year, but it was nowhere near as spectacular. It was far more workmanlike. And I think it'd be asking a lot for him to come back and do something similar. But even, as I said, being 5 or 6 pounds below his best, below that performance may well be good enough to win anyway. And for me, and I've been saying this again with a while, Fassad Vega is by far the most vulnerable. And when I'm looking at shorties, he's the one I want to be taking on. For the simple reason is, yes, he's been impressive. And Willie's a great proper bumper horse and he looks the best. But we have no idea what the ceiling of ability of those horses is. And for me, you know, American Mike's look good. Redemption Day's form got a boost yesterday. I'd be surprised if he goes off odds on, genuinely. Like, I know when I'm pricing it up, I haven't got the feel yet. I'd be absolutely shocked if I'm odds on Fassad Vega when I'm pricing that race.
Interesting.
I'd be almost certain I won't.
Ruby Walsh. Strong, most solid, most vulnerable.
What was the fourth one, PK?
So you have Shishkin, Alaho, Honeysuckle, and Fassad Vega.
I'm much the same as the lads. I think Fassad Vega, because of what we know about the opposition, who knows what Redemption Day is capable of doing, or American Mike, or even Fassad Vega. He might be capable of doing no more than he's done, or could be capable of a hell of a lot more. So that's the obvious one.
Yeah.
And of the most solid, which one would I go out thinking just don't fall off it? Would probably be Alaho.
Okay, interesting.
I think he's further ahead of the opposition. You don't know. I'd be fairly sure Honeysuckle is ahead of Appreciated, but he could have improved. And Shishkin probably has the least margin of error to uphold the form even with Enagrameen. So therefore, Alaho.
Whatever bubble wrap William Mullins has at Clissutton, please make sure Appreciated is wrapped head to toe, because if he doesn't go to that Champion Hurdle, be disappointed, because it's going to be great. Ruby, a quick question came into me.
I thought you were delivering a threat there or something, PK. I thought you were going to say, if he doesn't go to that Champion Hurdle, what exactly are you going to do?
Nothing. I'm just going to be very disappointed, Ruby, and I'll text you. For God's sake, Ruby. There you go. There's my threat. More texts. I'll send you more emails. I did get a question from Alex Kerr, regular on this podcast. Ruby, one straight for you. Just Allegory Devassi, she had a big drift in the market. Is she okay? Is everything okay with her, to your knowledge?
I didn't hear there wasn't, PK. It was a week of that, wasn't it? It was John Bonn, not Saturdays.
Like,
if you want to, if you really want to impact your mental health, start looking at the exchanges at the prices of the anti-post horses you've backed. And I tell you something now, you'll do your head in doing it. You know, look, there's obviously the times when there are ones get injured and the exchange tells you early. But I mean, if you're watching every single one of them, you'll do your head in.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Okay, let's move on to the Kim Muir. Now, just a health warning. We are talking on Monday.
About a handicap.
Yeah. Thank you, Ruby. Yes, that is a good health warning. We're talking about a handicap. And not only, Ruby, are we talking about a handicap, we're talking about a handicap before the weights are revealed. So we have really given ourselves quite the task. I'm going to give you the prices at the time for recording. These could be wildly different to the time this podcast goes out, because the weights are revealed tomorrow or Tuesday. 5-1 frontal assault, 8-1 smoking gun, and ain't that a shame. 10-1 Fleur, 10-1 Deal Kerr, Champagne Platinum, 12-1 Secret Prix, Facu Delen, Glenn Lowe, Grand Paradis, Schoolboy Hours, 14-1, and bigger the rest, including the weekend winner, Shantou Fleur. Is that winner in the 100 chase? Probably going that one. Okay, right. That was Shantou Bob. Right. Rory, this, we won't spend a huge amount of time with the Kim Muir, but it does look as though Gordon Elliott's going to have a strong hand again.
Yeah, he is. And there's one race in particular that tells you, gives you plenty of potential clues. Which came at Ferry House at the end of January. That was a beginner's chase won by Fleur with frontal assault second. Oh, well, I say frontal assault second. It was Dead Heat for second, frontal assault. And Grand Paradis with Egality Mon, 7 lengths behind them. Any one of the three could turn up for the Kim Muir. All three of them are entered. All three of them got a very, very good prep there. Obviously, Fleur's come out since and run the Grand National trial and run very well there. But Frontal Assault and Grand Paradis are very interesting. Particularly, I suppose, you would say Frontal Assault, given that he came from a fair way back, having lost his place there, to force a Dead Heat for second with Grand Paradis. And he's a horse who's been campaigned at around 2.5 mile over fences. He went to Cheltenham last year and ran in the Martin Pipe as well, over 2.5. He clearly wants 3 miles and more. You know, everything about him suggests he's a stayer. He's been outpaced at shorter trips, but has stayed on late in the day, notably so last time out. And he looks the obvious favourite, looking at that. I would have either him or Grand Paradis. I'd be very happy to have either of them. It's the thought I had immediately after that race. He's the horse who you know is going to relish 3.25 miles. I think Grand Paradis will stay as well. Grand Paradis is from a family with plenty of stamina. I know he was in front until fairly late on. He's run since as well, and again, been beaten, but run respectably at 2.5 miles. But I do think that the pair of them, who are rated 1.39 by the Irish handicapper,
Irrelevant.
Fleur is 1.41. So yeah, if they're all going to go up, you know, if they're going to go up £5, then that rules Fleur out. But it does put Frontal Assault and Grand Paradis within the weights band. And he's liable not to treat the form differently. He's, you know, these two Dead Heated, they're on the same mark. Whatever mark they get, the British handicapper should agree with. They're going to be close to the top weight, which is 1.45 for the Kim Muir. Used to be a 0-140, raised slightly in recent years. Yeah, so the pair of those make plenty of sense. Another horse who's reasonably short in the betting for the race is running as I speak, which doesn't help enormously, because that horse, if he doesn't win this race at Carlisle that's going on, he won't be getting in the race. And if he does win, he'll be nearly favourite. And that's right place, right time for Emmett Mullins. So I can't, that race is still going on. I can't make any comments about it. But
that's on Racing TV. Ruby Walsh, Racing yeah. TV ambassador, I'm sure has got Racing TV cameras all or TVs all over his house.
I can see it. I can see it unfolding. I don't think he's going to get there.
Oh no! Okay, live commentary.
And he would be off a mark of 1.30 in the UK, because obviously he's running in a novice handicap chase in the UK at the moment, off a UK mark, and he's finishing fourth. So that is him. He was second favourite in some lists, a very obvious one. If he won this race, he'd be getting a fixed £5 penalty, and it would look like a very good bit of placing, because the British handicapper couldn't touch him. That would get him in at the bottom of the weights. But as he's not won, he won't be getting in the race. And okay, that suddenly is one that you can discount.
Okay.
Although if you've backed him non-runner, no bet, you'll be getting your money back.
Lovely. So, even better result.
But anyway, back to Gordon's. Yeah, frontal assault does make appeal. He got outpaced. He got hampered at an early stage of the Martin Pipe last year, then got outpaced and then plugged on late in the day to finish eighth, I think. That obviously is very good form. We know who the winner is. He'll be running a no handicaps anytime soon. So yeah, I can see why Frontal Assault is at the top of the market. At the prices though, if he's sort of, you know, 5 or 6 to 1 and Grand Paradis 12 or 14, I'd be as happy to be back in the bigger price of the pair. You want to see what Gordon throws in the race though, obviously.
Yeah.
Just because they're in there doesn't mean that they're intended runners. I think this is the race for Frontal Assault, whereas Grand Paradis also in the plate and he's in the Ultima on the first day. And you'd say the Ultima would suit him perfectly well, whereas I think Frontal Assault wouldn't be suited as well by the Ultima. I think he'd be happier in this. Okay. So he makes plenty of appeal.
Frank Hickey, Glenn Lowe, been a bit of a disappointing horse, I suppose. Is that fair to say? He's been well touted to win a couple of these type of races.
2020, he was being the big plot job for the Camino, wasn't it? And he had a setback and missed the race. And look, he obviously had a fair setback. He was offering 2 years. And he shaped well at Limerick in the Tim Duggan on his second start back from that break, went fourth. But he was poor last time when 11-8 favoured at Punchestown. He was a well-beaten third that day. He's currently rated 128 over fences. Again, you imagine the UK handicap will put him up to 133, 134, probably might scrape in if he's lucky. And like, you know, people would be looking back to the pretense in 2018 when he was beaten a nose by Delta Work off 137. Look, a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then. And yeah, I'd be swerving him, to be honest. Look, he's 11 as well. Had an injury. Yeah, I'd be keeping away from him.
Did you have any dad on top of what Rory had said about Frontal Assault or anything else?
Fleur. Is that named after, I assume that's after Nadine Coyle saying flower, is it?
That's a pretty niche joke there, to be fair, lad.
Look, yeah, he's massive eye catcher in the Martin Pipe last year. I thought running on strongly, I'd echo everything that Rory said there about him. The only thing about it is he being more maybe campaigned with the Irish National in mind, considering he ran so well in the trial? But if he turned up, he'd be a player. Smoking Gun is interesting. Well, he was a well-beaten fifth in National Hunt Chase in 2020. Went backwards after that, switched from Joseph to Gordon. He fell at the first in the Troy Town, but then bolted up in the Porterstown, so stamina's no issue. He was pulled up in the Tie Estes and then ran well when beaten a little over length by full-time score in Discorama over 3 miles at Ferry House. He was staying on strongly. He's a bit hit and miss, not consistent, but would be half interesting if he ran here. Again, he's another one I think the Irish National might be the big target for him, but you wouldn't put a line through him if he turned up either. I have a few that are on the shortlist there now that I thought were interesting. Do you want me to run through them?
No, I'll get your thoughts on your shortlist after Ruby. I'm just bringing Ruby back in. No Willie Mullins horse for this one, Ruby. So you really have to delve outside the home team. Ain't That a Shame, DL Kerr, Factor Delaine. They're all Irish trained. They're all towards the top of the betting. Any of those catch your eye?
Yeah, but we see their marks, PK. To me, it's slightly irrelevant even talking about them. They could go up £3, £5, £9. Who knows what's going to happen. But the one I did like, if he could come back to form with a rating of 134, he was, I think, much better over hurdles. And having watched him on his first start over fences, I do think he can do it over fences. And that's Oscar Elite. He was second to Vanilla in last year's Albert Bartlett. He then went to entry and was third behind Ahoy Senor and Brewing Up a Storm. He fell at Cheltenham on his first start behind 300 True 5, pulled out relatively quickly in Huntington then, where he was run out of it late on by Brinkley. He's dropped back to 2.5 miles for his next two starts behind Lomprese and Imperial Alcazar at Cheltenham on Trials Day. I think going right up to 3.25 miles in the Kim Muir, slightly down in grade, could suit Oscar Elite. Were he to go here?
I've been asked to ask you, do you know what Patrick rides? Do you think Patrick knows what he's riding yet?
Well, let's say after watching Right Place, Right Time, you won't be riding him.
Okay, ruled one out. He was actually just pushed out to 10-1. He was, I think, 5-1 before when we started talking, Rory.
125, Rory, is that what he is in England?
He's 130 in England, so he won't get in the race of 130.
Okay. 130.
Yeah. Unless he find another race to win between now and then, that seems unlikely.
Even if he does, that's £15 off the top weight, which would be 11 stone 10, is it?
Yeah.
That would be 10 stone 10 minus 1, 10 stone 9 would be beyond Patrick Mullins anyway.
Okay. So we don't know what Patrick's gonna ride at this stage. Right, decision time. Give us Frank, you're getting the short list, and I've seen your short list before. They're not short. Rory.
Can we have the short version of your short list? Just our names rather than the reasons and the theories.
Well, I'll run through, like, as in, look,
what finished sixth? There's
nothing like that. Like, it's just a quick, like, obviously I'll rattle through them very quick. You've Champagne Platinum. He was 5-1 favourite for this in 2020 when only a 6-year-old. I just did something there, but I think it's 19. What was it? Oh, sorry, it's the Fox. Like, the last 10 years of this race, like, 7 horses have won at a single figure price. The market's getting this right. So maybe being completely going left field isn't really working out for you in this race. But anyway, Champagne Platinum, he'd be a player. He seems to have kind of come back to form since switching to Ender Bulger. He won the beginners at Navan, beating Ian Dadashame, ran well in the national trial behind Death Duty, went second. He's rated 139. You imagine he'll just scrape in. One that is a little bit left field is Castle Robin for Charlie Longston, improving 7-year-old. He's won at Cheltenham on the old course over hurdles in November 2020. He's relatively lightly raced, so he's opened a bit more improvement. He was third in the Grade 2 River Don over hurdles, missed the Albert Bartlett, albeit that was a poor renewal of the River Don. He won in his chase debut at Exeter, disappointed twice, won again at the weekend in a small enough in a three-runner field at Doncaster, was the last week, sorry. He'd be half interesting if he turned up here. Come On Teddy, interesting if he runs here off the back of his Portemps run last year. I think he might end up in the Ultima, though. Deal Kerr would be interesting. And David Pipe has won this twice in the last 11 years. He has Jericho Rock entered. He's only a 6-year-old. Maybe might come a little bit too soon, but his four starts over fences have been, fairly good. He was placed up in Weatherby over 2 miles, 3.5 furlongs, I think. That's probably too short for him. Since he stepped up in trip, he's been beaten half a length by Pat's Fancy. Pat's Fancy won again, beating Imperial Alcazar, and was, ran really well behind Brave Man's Game. Jericho Rock was then second in the Mandarin at Newbury, third, fourth, and eighth, all won from that. He was second in the Classic Chase behind Eclair Surf, albeit beaten a long way. But Eclair Surf ran really well when second in the Eider at the weekend. He's rated 133. If he got a run, he'd be half interesting. But I think the one that really is interesting from a...
You only get to now! Oh, for God's
sake. Mr. Fogpatches. Look, I'm not saying he's going to win, but I mean from a just... always runs his race. He's extremely consistent, even if he has only won twice in 30 starts on the rules. This season, he's hit the frame at Listowel, in the Cork National, the Troy Town, at Cheltenham in December, and in the Tiestes. I was looking at it thinking he might get a mark of about 142, 143 would be my guess. With non-runner no bet, you can just back him anyway, and if he doesn't, if he doesn't get in or doesn't declare, you'll be fine. But yeah, I think he's about 20-1. He'd look very interesting now. He'll stay better ground, would suit, but at the same time he handles soft ground as well, and he's acted around Cheltenham before, so he'd be the one that interests me.
20-1, you're right, well done. The short list is not that short, and rattling through it, we're going to have to teach you what that means. Rory, give us your thoughts. Your winner, the Kim Muir.
I like Grand Parody. I know Frontal Assault's got a exactly the same chance on paper, and might be better suited by the trip. But if Grand Parody rocks up on this race, I'll take a chance on him. As I said, he could go Ultima as well, but his jumping was a bit of an issue earlier in the season, but it's got better as time has gone on. Although he's not put his head in front, Godin's very good at getting these horses absolutely spot on for Cheltenham, and I do like the horse.
Sorry, Frank, I was a bit harsh on you. Thank you, Rory. That was Grand Parody. And Ruby, you're sticking with Oscar Leach, who's 16-1?
I am, PK.
Lovely.
That may well change when we see what weights the Irish horses get, but at the moment, yeah, Oscar Leach.
You've got a good record of tipping up 16-1 shots in the last few days. Okay, let's...
It's my go-to price.
It is. We'll move to the Fox Hunters. I've got a question from Eddie Coffey. I'm going to nominate Rory for this one. Hi, lads. The UK horses seem to have good chances of winning the first three races on the Tuesday at Cheltenham. Is there a possibility that Ireland could become a backable prize for the Presbury Cup after the first three races or at the end of day one? Rory DeLargy.
I can't believe there's betting on the Presbury Cup at all, to be perfectly honest. But well, yes, it's, if you're wanting to have a bet in the Presbury Cup and you think the Brits have the best of the early exchanges, then by all means, wait until they get a few winners on the board and then back the Irish. That's always a good idea. And punters betting on league formats always tend to look at the run of matches and decide when the best time to step in is. And if they think that the team is going to have a difficult run at a certain period of time, then you back them after that and you take the inflated odds. So yeah, it does make sense, but the Presbury Cup, really, come on.
1-12 currently, Ireland. 8-1 the tie, 10-1
You mightn't be as relevant after Sir Gerard wins the Supreme and Haughton Clore wins the Arkle. And then
and no prizes, no offers. N/O could be the price on Ireland for the Presbury Cup, which it probably should be anyway. Fox Hunters, folks, let's get stuck in. Ruby Walsh, we have to start with you. Bill away. I can't think of a horse. Rory and Frank will correct me. I'm sure. Oh, there's the one last year that won the Ultima, who would look to win a race for the at least third time, having run a Billaway, obviously beaten in the last two Fox Hunters. Can he do it? Ah,
come on, PK. There's a way, way, way more famous one than that.
Oh, okay. Give me the race. And I might get it.
Famous, like the race. The race of the meeting. The Golden Jewel.
Cheltenham Golf Club. Jewel.
Yeah.
Crap. Oh, Desi?
No, start maybe, but I'm starting to feel a little embarrassed for you.
Are you?
No, I'm
okay.
A bit sure.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know.
He was Vintage Cloud's fifth start in the Ultimate as well.
Yeah, he was like five. That was why I was like, what? Give me a clue.
I can think of another horse.
You give me the fellow.
Yeah.
Was he French?
Twice beating a short head.
French horse.
Then finished fourth and then went to Mundo Gold Cup.
What year are we talking here? And I'll tell you my age.
Oh, what age? What year are we talking, Rory?
Oh, Lord.
Was it
93, 94?
Yeah, around then. Yeah.
Okay, it was 10.
Thought it was 95, maybe 94.
Yeah. 10. I was 10. Okay. Frank, would you have got that?
Definitely not.
Yes.
I can also think of a horse who's won a championship race having his fifth go at it, I think.
No.
But see Pigeon won the champion hurdle.
On his fifth go?
Well, he won it on his fourth go as well, mind you. But he was beaten several times before he won a 10 and 11, didn't he?
Okay.
So
like to get that PK, we would have had to have racing on at home. And we had, I'd say, two channels at that stage in the early 90s. I can guarantee you whatever was on the other channel is what my parents would be watching, not the racing.
You can speak for yourself there now, Frank. Kicking ball, Patrick Kennelly was raised in the house.
Racing. I can't say that there wasn't always racing on in my house. Yeah. Right, Ruby, Bill Away bids become the next Sea Pigeon then by winning the Fox Hunters at the third time. That's the only time Sea Pigeon and Bill Away put the same sentence.
Or the fellow. I think the cheap piece has definitely made a big difference to Billoway at Nace on his last start. And they will have to have the same effect at Cheltenham. Look, he got beaten a nose last year. Beaten a nose at Punchestown by Bob and Co. He got beaten a short head by Porlock Boy at the festival. What does he need to improve? Wing Leader beat him in Tordis, but they're going to be the top four in the betting. And yeah, if the cheap piece is going to have the desired effect on him, maybe he will get his head in front at the third time of asking.
3-1 favourite at the time of recording. Wing Leader, as mentioned there, Ruby, 5-1. 7-1 Jet, who was beaten at the weekend. 8-1 Staker Wallace, Bob and Co, as mentioned. 10-1 Goodbye Sam. Quick word on Goodbye Sam, Ruby. I don't know how long he's been in the William Williams yard. I thought that was a promising run on debut for the team.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'd be surprised. Were he good enough as a 6-year-old to win the Fox Hunters? He'd had one run in a point for us as well in Abelogue. Came from France. He's obviously a dead maiden. He's gone down the Hunter Chase route. He could definitely improve to be one with a bit more age on his side. He's still quite a raw individual.
Okay, we'll keep an eye out for Goodbye Sam. 10-1 Dolphin Square and 11-1 Porlock Bay.
I'm not trying to correct you, it's Ahabolog, because I'm not correcting him as in being smart like Matt would, but like Ahabolog, it's from Cork, and I know the Cork people would be like, Jesus.
What did I call it? Ahabolog?
Ahabolog, it's Ahabolog.
Ahabolog.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you speak good hurling. We used to have good hurling matches with them back in the 90s.
Getting good hurling mentions on today's pod. Okay, back to you, Frank, then. Brilliant effort on your Cork pronunciation, given that we usually
It's enough of murdering French ones, so when I get a Cork one, I can get right. I'm like, come on, give me a chance.
Explain to me the price differential between Wing Leader, who's 5-1, and Billoway, who's 3-1, and Wing Leader smashed him up last time out.
Turles? Is Turles going to be Billoway's track? Definitely not. Wing Leader's improving, but like, Billoway's been to Cheltenham and run well on a couple of occasions. Look, Wing Leader, he's had 14 starts in Hunter Chase. He's won four of them. He was second in six of them. He's only eight. He's improving. I just don't think Billoway would be suited by what kind of test you get at Turles. And he didn't have cheap pieces on either that day. The positive as well for Wing Leader, I assume Barry O'Neill will ride. That's a positive. And he has definite claims. But is he a wild prize that you want to be steaming into? Definitely not, for me, okay. Anyway. The Art of Another, interesting one in Vosle. He's only 7, very lightly raised. He ran twice over hurdles for Liz Doyle, was second in a point, went to David Christie. He won his first 300 Hay starts and easily won a point. If you look at when he won the Champion Novice Hunter Chase at Stratford, he had Premier the second, bolted up in points since, but the third Premier Magic was back in third. That horse actually beat Porlock Bay in a point in December this year. So you can kind of draw, you know, look, you can't take him completely literally or anything, the form literally, but give you an idea of, you know, the potential he might have. He was beaten up at Down Royal at Christmas, but I'm not sure the drop back to 2.5 might have been ideal, or a lot of his form's on better ground, so maybe soft grounds against him. I'm not sure, but I think he's better than what he showed up in Down Royal, definitely. And he's a young horse, and he has plenty of potential. The only thing I was looking at is it's 2014 since a horse younger than 10 won the Fox Hunter, which is, yeah, maybe a negative, but he's definitely got ability, and I wouldn't put a line through him at all.
Okay. Roy Zalargi, what are your thoughts on this year's Fox Hunter?
Well, I might as well stick with the Brits to some degree, given the notes I was given for this. Jet rather blotted his copybook yesterday. He won at Kelso, and he looked to have a bit of a, in some people's eyes, a penalty kick at Fontwell yesterday. But he ran into Chantou Flyer, and Chantou Flyer might get an entry for this. Now, he's a horse he was placed in the race before, and he ran in the Kim Muir last year, and he's in the betting for the Kim Muir. But I don't think he's eligible to run now that he's running 100 chase. I need to double check that. But my 100 chase expert says that's him ruled out of the Kim Muir by running in that 100 chase.
You've all those books behind you, Rory. Surely one of those.
No, it doesn't.
The 100 chase rules.
I'm trying to read through the Weatherby's racing calendar and the small print and the conditions of the race, just to clarify that. But my understanding is that Chantou Flyer will be put into the race, but only in case something happens to Bob and Co. Mm. But I would rather have Chantou Flyer than Bob and Co. He's got better Cheltenham form. Mm. I know he's a 12-year-old now. He's 12-year-old against an 11-year-old. Bob and Co, he was let down by his jumping in the race last year. He travelled very strongly, but he made two or three mistakes before he came down. Whereas Chantou Flyer has a terrific record over fences. At Cheltenham, which I will dig out here. He's run 9 times over fences at Cheltenham. He fell on the National Hunt Chase. Otherwise, he's never been worse than 4th. He got 2 wins, 4 seconds, and a 3rd to his name. Several of those at the Cheltenham Festival. He's been 2nd in the Ultima. He's been 2nd in the 3rd in the Kim Muir. He was, I think, 2nd in another festival appearance as well. He's a winner of a novice chase when he was trained by Colin Bow, and he just always runs his race when he comes to Cheltenham. And his placed effort behind Mount Ida and the Kim Muir last year would be good enough to win the Fox Hunter if he reproduced it. And he showed there's plenty of fight in him yesterday. He came back after a fair layoff and beat Jet by 5.5 lengths at Fontwell. And I think David Maxwell might be missing a trick if he thinks this is just a reserve for Bob and Co. Because I think he would have a better chance of winning the Fox Hunter than Bob and Co would, because he's a more reliable jumper. He fell on the National Hunt Chase. That's 6 years ago now, as a 6-year-old. But he's kept his form and his enthusiasm remarkably well. And I could see him running a really good race. Having spoken to one or two people, the feeling is, well, he had his chance 2 years ago and he didn't win. So let's not try again. I find that a very odd way of looking at things. I know. I think you have a look at what your credentials are on the day. And if he looks like he's got a decent chance on paper and he's coming off a win, beating a horse who was, you know, higher rated than him and expected to do better, I think you give him his chance.
Did you come back and tell him about the fellow and Sea Pigeon?
I didn't, but they should know that anyway, quite frankly. But there you go. So I'd like Chantou Flyer to get his chance. And if he ran in the race, he's not in the betting with most firms, because he wasn't being considered for the race, but if he did come into it, that he's 16s in one or two places, and that would appeal, certainly non-runner no bet. But as I said, Bob and Co is very talented, but he's not an easy ride and not the most fluent of jumpers. So this fella would be an interesting one. Similarly, I wouldn't rule Jet out on the basis of that run at Fontwell. That came quickly after Kelso. I thought, you know, they just had to finish 2nd. He was pretty much guaranteed 2nd. There were 2 no-hopers in the race. So they'll be happy enough that he's achieved that. I thought that Sam Whaley-Cohen tried to bully David Maxwell out of it and came off the worst. I thought he was outridden by David Maxwell on the day. But given a bit more of a break now between this and Cheltenham, I think Jet is liable to drift a little bit on the back of what will go down as a disappointing effort. But I think in reality, it wasn't a bad run at all, when he was probably not entirely over his Kelso exertions. And at a more straightforward track, if you like, Fontwell's not every horse's track, the figure of 8 chase course. He didn't look particularly comfortable on it. I can see him bouncing back and running well as well.
Yeah, I think your opinion shared by the trading team, because I don't think he budged from 7-1 for the race before and after the race yesterday. Okay, right selections, Ruby Walsh. Give us the winner of the St. James's Place, Hunter's Chase.
Look, I'm sticking with Billoway, but I doubt it's a race I would have any financial interest in.
The next fellow, Billoway. Frank Hickey?
Oh, it wouldn't be a race I'd be looking to have an anti-post bet on. Not saying I wouldn't have an opinion come final deck stage. If I had to have a bet now, I might take a chance on the young horse Fossilet. But
you don't ever, ever, ever have to have a bet, and that is crucial. So if you don't fancy him, you don't fancy him. Think Rory DeLargy?
As I said, I'd like to stick with Chantry Flyer if he turns up. I know that the current line is that he's just in there in case, but given how well he goes to Cheltenham, it would be a terrible shame for him not to run. So I'll hope that Mr. Maxwell sees sense and gives him a chance.
Frank, by the time we finish recording, can you make sure he's in the betting for the Fox Hunters? Have a word with your boss, Niall, would you?
And take him out of the Kim Muir.
Once you
check the small print and see if that is the case.
Okay, so by the time this goes out, hopefully he'll be in the betting for the race and put him a nice price too. Be good. That's it, gentlemen. Thank you very much. We've covered those three staying chases and we've rattled through Frank Hickey style all of the races. Again, I just want to remind you of the Cheltenham Bunker. I want to remind you there is a possibility of you winning free tickets. And I finally want to remind you, for those still listening, pop into a Paddy Power shop next week. Between Monday and Friday, we're going to have live Cheltenham previews. Ruby Walsh is going to be there with my team on Monday. Are you looking forward to Ruby?
I laid in my whole Cheltenham build-up, PK.
I hate doing this as a podcast. People can't see Ruby's face. The highlight of his whole Cheltenham build-up is spending an entire day with me. Ruby Walsh on Monday. On Tuesday, we're going to Matt Chapman. It's a shame you're not there on the same day. On Wednesday, Mick Fitz is going to be in studio with us. On Thursday, we're going to have Fran Berry. And then on Friday, we have Jane Mangan. So we've got a brilliant team. Into your Paddy Power shop all next week, Monday through to Friday. You'll get loads of turbo power prizes and power prizes as well. So there's my bit for the shops. Hope you like that. Right, until next week, where we're going to look at the handicaps with weights and ratings, and we'll get our best bets for Cheltenham. We'll be back next Monday. We'll be back on Fridays for you to look ahead to the weekend. Might get Chappers back and see if himself, Frank and Ruby can have a bit of an adder.
I'm looking forward to having a little bit of a shortlist now for these handicaps.
Hey, come on, Frank. I'm not going to let that one down. Right, listen, gentlemen, enjoy. Thanks very much. Watch out for enhancements on the Paddy Power website and shops. Until next time, take it easy.